Progressive Radio News Hour with Stephen Ledman, Thursdays at 11 a.m. and weekends at 1 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome to the Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lenman. Two guests today, my regularly scheduled guest. I'll introduce them both. And my, shall I say, an emergency guest because of the rude awakening we got overnight, and I'm speaking to what's ongoing in Japan. I'll get to that in just a moment. But my regular guest is Bob Abele. Bob has been on before. Bob is a professor of humanities and philosophy at Diablo Valley College in California. He's authored four books, including Democracy Gone, Anatomy of a Deception, about the Iraq invasion, occupation, and preparation for the next deception. We'll kind of review the world and the nation with Bob, and he's on the line now. He'll listen into what my second guest has today, who knows an awful lot more about the potential for nuclear catastrophe than certainly more than I do, and maybe more than Bob as well. But Javi Wasserman is joining us at the top of the hour for about 15 minutes or so, whatever time Javi can spare. And we want to talk about Japan's Fukushima reactor meltdown, the potential catastrophic fallout from it in Japan, in East Asia, and beyond. And one comment, and then I'll let Javi talk about what's going on. We've seen the scenario play out before. Something awful happens that the government does not want to say too much alarming about, shall we put it that way? So they downplay incidents. My goodness, they did it at Chernobyl. They did it at Three Mile Island. They do it lots of times about lots of different things. And they'll never tell us the full story, so people like Javi have to dig it out on their own so people can read about it, hear about it, and know, in fact, what did happen, not the stuff that comes out of politicians' offices and their PR agents and so on. But very dramatic things are going on in Japan. Javi, I welcome you to the program. First time you've been on. Talk about Japan and what's going on as far as what you know.
Well, what we know is really, really not good. It's actually terrifying. There are five reactors that are compromised, as best we can tell. Right now, there are 11 of them are shut, although five additional reactors at Kashiwazaki are still shut from the last earthquake. You have to remember, this is the second time in less than 5 years that six or more reactors in Japan have had to shut because of earthquakes. There were seven reactors at the Kashiwazaki site that were shut down in July of 2007, and now this has happened, but this is much worse. As best we can tell, there was an explosion. Well, we know for sure there was an explosion at the Fukushima plant. One of the units there are six at Fukushima. And we don't know if the containment has been breached. I am publishing and archiving articles as they come in at a website called nukefree.org, nukefree.org, and I have a blog there. The site is put up by Bonnie Ray Jackson Brown and Graham Nash, and we've been posting articles there since 2007. I've got the video up there, and it's really a terrifying piece of work. Now, what they're claiming in Japan is that what blew up was just the a building around the containment building. This is really dubious. It appears there may have been a hydrogen explosion, which is very, very serious. And what's also even more serious is that this thing is not over. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know if there's going to be a meltdown. It is very, very likely that radiation is, well, it's certain that radiation is escaping. We don't know how much. The Japanese have evacuated an area 20 miles around, a radius of 20 miles around the plant. This is a big area. 20 miles is a long way to be evacuating people. And, of course, the resources are so horribly stretched as a result of the quake and the tsunami. We hope that they're going to be calling in people from the United States and Russia and other regions to help them. Now, yesterday, Mrs. Clinton, the Secretary of State, said that we were flying in coolant to this reactor. I don't think that's true. It's more likely that we've been sending in batteries and backup generators. One of the great geniuses, to put it facetiously, of nuclear power designs is that when a reactor goes down, it still requires power to keep it cool. And actually, Matt Wald had a good article about this in the New York Times, which I've posted at Nuke Free. And essentially, if you lose all power, then you're not able to cool the reactor sufficiently. And that's what happened. They initially, when the first problems happened with the reactor, they were up for about 8 hours with batteries, but batteries only last about that long. And when they ran out of battery juice, they're in desperate straits. I believe they put in new batteries. I think they've also called for backup generators, but when you do that, you also have to bring in liquid fuel, and it's not necessarily a done deal that the generators will be able to hook up properly, when there's so much damage.
Can I throw one thing in, Harvey? I got a bulletin from a group called Stratfor Global Intelligence, and they said that a meltdown occurred, but so far it was not known whether the floor of the reactor was breached. If that happens, it said, then it's a whole new ball game. There will be the potential for a very, very serious situation that may not be containable. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. Now, you can have a partial meltdown, and some of the fuel will melt, and some of the radiation will get out. But it may not be a total meltdown. At Three Mile Island, we had a significant meltdown, although the company denied it for 9 years. They said there was no melting of fuel. And then a robotic camera went in and discovered that, a very significant quantity of the fuel melted. At Fukushima, it's highly likely, from what I've been reading, that at least some of the fuel melted. Now, if they have a complete meltdown, then we have what's called the China syndrome, or that, you know, of course in Japan, they're very close to China, but the facetious idea was that the ball of radioactive material would melt all the way through the earth and come out in China. What actually would happen is this molten mass of radioactive material would melt through the floor of the containment and go into the earth. There's really nothing that can stop it. And when it hits water, it will cause a steam explosion, which will put incalculable amounts of radiation into the atmosphere. Nothing can contain that. And we just, God forbid, that should happen. What's truly terrifying here is that there are 5 reactors, as I've mentioned, that are compromised, and we don't know what's going to happen with any of them. The Japanese shut 11, and we're hoping that the other 6 at least are safely shut down. You also have to remember that at all these nuclear sites, and this is a 40-year-old reactor, by the way, so that means that there's a lot of spent radioactive fuel on the site. We don't know if that's been compromised by the tsunami, and that also has to be cooled. And if you don't cool the spent fuel, you can also run into a very serious accident. So these are very, very serious is an understatement here. And if there is, as your blogger says, a meltdown of all the fuel, then we're looking at an apocalyptic situation, not unlike Chernobyl. Chernobyl did explode, but that took the whole reactor out. It doesn't seem that this explosion at Fukushima, which has been filmed and is a very, you know, there are a lot of URLs out there that you can take a look at it. It's not fun to watch. That does not seem to have been rooted in the actual reactor. It does seem that a surrounding building blew up, which is not quite as serious, but we don't know what's going to come next.
You know, it's hard for me to imagine, Javi, that you could have an explosion and the inner reactor or whatever it is came out of it unscathed and just the super concrete.
You're right. You're right. I'm sorry to interrupt.
With this reinforced concrete, whatever they use for the shell of a nuclear reactor, that was blown. I read one report that said the top of the reactor was blown off. You mean to say the core reactor itself came through that unscathed? It just doesn't make any sense to me.
No, it doesn't for a number of reasons. First of all, there are, even if the containment remained intact, which is highly unlikely, but even if it remained intact, you have stacks for venting that had to have been blown off. There's no way that the stacks could have withstood an explosion like that. And then you have to worry about the control room. You know, it's one thing to say, well, the containment was not breached, but who is in there operating the reactor when there's an explosion there? Who could have operated these reactors through an earthquake? Can you imagine being in the containment room? The control room of a reactor when an 8.8 or 8.9 Richter earthquake hits the building. It's not conceivable. So this is not a happy situation. We don't know. I've also what's happening. I have read that they're using seawater to try and contain to cool down the reactors. Now, seawater is obviously is salty, and you have all sorts of chemical alloys in these plants on the fuel cladding, on the control rods, in the containment pressure vessel that are will corrode pretty quickly with seawater. And so we don't know what's going to happen there. Clearly, this reactor will never be used again. Thank goodness for that. But let's hope it doesn't go much further. There's also another dimension here. When you have a 40-year-old reactor, which this is, there's a big issue that's been ongoing about relicensing reactors that has to do with embrittlement. When a reactor operates for 40 years, the metals in this reactor have been subjected to very heavy pressures, a lot of heat, and a lot of radiation. And metals just can't stand forever, and it's our belief that reactors that have been in operation this long are subjected to embrittlement of the metal, which means that if the metal is then exposed quickly to cold water, which would happen here, the metals could very well shatter. And if the metals shatter, especially in the reactor pressure vessel, they may succeed in slowing down the reaction and getting rid of some of the heat. But the whole structure could just, you know, turn to powder, essentially. It's a bit of an overstatement, but this is a known phenomenon. There is a reactor in the United States, the Yankee Row reactor in Massachusetts, that was forced to shut in 1991. Because they could not convince the Nuclear Regulatory Commission that the embrittlement was not an issue. So this is a known quantity as well. The other problem here with an old reactor is that it's been operating so long that it's highly radioactive in its structure. Everything is permeated with radioactivity. Both Three Mile Island and Chernobyl were very new reactors. And so there was plenty of radiation in there, but an older reactor may well have more radiation to emit, unfortunately. And, of course, there's all that fuel, and we don't know what's happening, but it's sitting outside the plant. We certainly hope that the tsunami didn't reach any of it, because if so, then enormous quantities of radiation go into the water.
You know, a couple of observations from me, Javi, somebody who very much is not a nuclear expert. I have an article drafted for tomorrow. I'll finish it up this afternoon. I end with a quote from Albert Einstein in 1946 that the way I interpreted it basically came down to, we have a choice. We can either keep nuclear power and face extinction, or we can save the human race and get rid of this technology from hell. I think you would agree that nuclear power really is a hellish technology, and sooner or later, there's no way to contain this thing if it goes out of control. So if we don't get rid of this damn thing, commercial, military, in all form, I don't know about about nuclear medicine, but nuclear power plants and of course weapons, nuclear weapons. If we don't banish this stuff, it's going to destroy us sooner or later.
Well, we have no choice, and I got to tell you also that American reactors are definitely compromised. For example, you mentioned Diablo. Diablo Canyon. There are two reactors at Diablo Canyon in California, between at San Luis Obispo, between San Francisco and Los Angeles, and then there are two more at San Onofre, between Los Angeles and San Diego, and all four of the reactors, two at each site. All four of these reactors are very close to earthquake faults that could, in fact, deliver a similar seismic shock. Now, the 8.8, 8.9 is, you know, very, very extraordinarily powerful. The people who built these plants say that the nearby earthquake faults can't deliver such a big shock. I don't believe it for a minute. Those reactors need to shut very, very quickly, because there is no way that they could, either one of them could stand, or all four of them could stand the kind of shock that we've just seen in Japan. And I will tell you that a major disaster at any of the four reactors in California would send radiation across the entire United States. There is a mind-boggling map that's been it's an animated computer-generated map showing the progress of the radiation as it came out from Chernobyl in 1986. That radiation within 2 weeks covered all of Europe and a landmass much larger than the United States. So there is no doubt that we could have an apocalyptic event, certainly at the four reactors in California, all four of which are very, very vulnerable to an earthquake like the one that just hit in Japan.
We're really in uncharted territory, Avi, and it's very scary. I live in Chicago. I'm a long way from Japan, but literally that damn thing can have fallout in Chicago, and it's shocking. And one more thing, too. The idea of building a nuclear plant in the first place strikes me as insane. Building it in an earthquake-prone area, especially an extremely prone area, vulnerable area like Japan, and where this Fukushima plant was built, I mean, it's almost like daring Mother Nature. Come on, come and get me. And then Mother Nature, you remember the old commercial, you don't mess with Mother Nature. Mother Nature wins out. So the poor Japanese and poor all of us, and we really have a colossal mess on our hands.
I was in Japan in 1975 and 76. I went around the country speaking, and everybody was aware of this issue. It's not like this is a surprise. Everybody talked about it. You know, the industry said, no, we can handle it. There are 55 reactors in Japan. Every single one of them is vulnerable to an earthquake because of Japan. And but I tell you, people in Chicago, if you think that you're safe from this,
I know.
the radiation from Chernobyl did go over Chicago. It was mapped. It was very clear within 2 weeks. Well, the radiation from Chernobyl hit California in 10 days. It was a known event. It carried all the way across the northern tier of the United States. It did hit Chicago and then Detroit and then Cleveland.
The point I wanted to make was that Chicago is surrounded by old, ill-maintained, shoddy-maintained nuclear power plants. If my count is right, I think we have 11 of them within about a 100-mile radius or so of Chicago. And if one of those bloody things has a catastrophic meltdown and Chicago was downwind, in plain English, it's goodbye, Chicago.
Well, it doesn't matter if Chicago's downwind initially or not, because the wind eventually goes 360 degrees. You do have 11 there. Or two, thankfully, we shut at Zion, as you know. Those two reactors are shut, thankfully, although the fuel is still there.
So down to 9 nuclear reactors.
I spent a lot of time in Chicago on those reactors. And I will tell you also that it's quite possible that the most powerful earthquake fault in the United States is not in California. It's actually straight up the Mississippi. It's the New Madrid Fault.
Oh, yeah.
And there are two reactors in Missouri that are very vulnerable. And ironically, the only reactor so far in the United States that's been actually damaged by an earthquake is in Ohio. The Perry nuclear plant, 35 miles east of Cleveland, was hit on January 31st, 1986, with a 5.5 Richter scale plant shock. It knocked out pipes inside the plant. I mean, God knows how anybody would have been able to operate the plant through the earthquake. And then It took out roads and bridges. I'm actually in Ohio now, and there was a study done by the governor of the state of Ohio that proved definitively that you can't evacuate Perry or any other nuclear plant in the middle of an earthquake. And so the reactors around Illinois, ironically, Clinton and on up to the Byron and Braidwood, those reactors are all vulnerable to earthquakes. So there are earthquake faults running right up the Mississippi River.
I'm just sitting here minding my own business, Avi, and I feel like I'm playing Russian roulette. It's not a game I want to play, but I'm being forced to play. Avi, I really appreciate you coming on.
Well, let me tell you one more thing before you let me go, and I appreciate you having me on. There is pending in the federal budget for 2012, $36 billion worth of loan guarantees to build new nuclear plants in the United States. Obama is supporting it. There are Democrats who are supporting it. We can take action. If we get these $36 billion out of the federal budget, there's no private money, and certainly not after this, there's no private money to build new nuclear plants. The only way it's going to happen is if the federal government uses our taxpayer money to fund new reactor construction. So if we can get and call your congresspeople, call Obama, don't let this moment go by, because we've got to get that money out of the federal budget so that no more nuclear plants are built in this country.
A big amen. Javi, I really appreciate you coming on. We did it on short notice.
Fine, and I appreciate it. You have seen me at nukefree.org. I will post your article. If you send me the URL, I'll post it.
I will send it to you. I bookmark newfree.org. I will follow it daily to see what is going on. You know this stuff. Again, Javi, my great, great thanks to you.
Well, thank you. Anytime, and let's hope next time we talk it's under happier circumstances.
Oh, indeed so.
Take care.
Bob, I guess you took that all in.
I'm still trying to take it all in. That's a pretty heavy bit of news information that is not out there in the mainstream media now.
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not. And in the article that I will get out tomorrow, I call it nuclear meltdown in Japan. I mean, the New York Times said, I think it was the New York Times, I'm looking at a number of report, Reuters, New York Times, the Stratfor Global Intelligence that I get bulletins on. They very definitely said there's a core meltdown, but they don't know how bad and whether the floor is breached and it's gotten into the ground and the earth and the water and so on. And you heard what Javi has to say. I mean, you do that. I mean, it's not going from Japan to Chicago through the earth, but I mean, we really have something catastrophic on our hands. Wow, this was not a good piece of news.
Like with the Chernobyl meltdown, and I didn't realize that it could release that much radiation. And watching what was going on with the Japan plants, nothing was said in the stories, and I think it's probably because nobody knew that there could be that much radiation that could come about from these, from any meltdown of these plants that would cover the earth like that. That's a pretty scary thought.
Oh, it really is. And the Chernobyl incident that they encased that plant, the event from 1986, they didn't want to talk about this, but nearly a million people died because of Chernobyl, and they got that thing encased. And, of course, anybody who worked on it or lived close by that plant, it was Katy by the door for them. So I feel sorry for these Japanese people who are fairly close to this plant. And, of course, Japan is not that big a country territorially. So everybody in the north is vulnerable, but the whole country is vulnerable. East Asia is vulnerable. And then I saw a map, a simulation of the way the radiation spreads globally. I hate to tell you this, but it's got it covering the entire west coast of the U.S. But as Javi said, it's going to hit Chicago.
Yeah, that's when I first started listening to Javi, the first thing I thought was, well, maybe I could move real quick before. But then he said, oh, it's going to cover Chicago, too. And I thought, well, there's no place to go. You can't hide from radiation once it gets up in the upper atmosphere.
That's exactly right. And I'm well aware, it's been a while since I've written about this, but several years ago I wrote about the effects of depleted uranium, and the atmospheric fallout has been measured in countries many hundreds of miles away from the Middle East, where so much of depleted uranium has been used, Iraq for certain, Afghanistan now, and the Gulf War in 1991, And it I mean, all the wars that America fights, Yugoslavia in 1999, depleted uranium weapons were used. So that is proliferating everywhere, and I believe on a global basis. So literally there can be DU radiation dust on your doorstep, and it's been there for years, and people don't even know it. And you know, Bob, you get sick years later. You come down with God knows what, because radiation can cause a vast menu of illnesses, the kind nobody wants to get, and you can never attribute it to this cause, which gives these guys a blanket cover to go on using this horrible stuff. But we're very slowly destroying ourselves. And if we don't get saner people running the country and running the world, I don't know when it's going to happen, Bob, but I think sooner or later planet Earth no more will exist.
Well, that's one of the things that really struck me with Carl Sagan when he first came out with his book Cosmos, that he was very clear about this, that one of the things that higher intelligence, alleged higher intelligence life forms, would have to encounter at some point in their civilization was their own self-imposed destruction. And when we're looking for life on other planets, we have to remember that that's one of the possibilities we'd run into, that a civilization would become very advanced and then commit mass suicide. And this could well be one of those things, one of those scenarios. And Sagan himself talked about that with nuclear power and nuclear weapons. That could be humanity's breach, you know, where they come across that point of, do we commit self-destruction or not? This could be that particular moment. You've got global warming going on right now, and then all of the other things with the radiation. And people not only are not paying attention to it, but the problem is that you had just mentioned, there is a long period of time for all of this radiation to go through a gestation period where people don't know what's happening to them, the numbers aren't there. It takes almost a whole generation before we really get all of the numbers together about what's been happening. George Bush the First use of depleted uranium in his invasion of Iraq, we're just now getting a lot of those numbers together, you know, 10, 15 years down the road.
Oh, absolutely.
Actually, longer than that, 20 years down the road. So that's part of the problem, that these numbers come late. By the time the numbers come in and we can figure out, the populace can figure out what's been going on, it's already been done.
Oh, it's already been done. I wrote, and again, it's been a good while, but I wrote several articles on the effects of depleted uranium, mostly on U.S. forces. And, you know, they don't live in the country. They go and they put their tour of duty in. And the Gulf War was a short tour. That war was over in 4 weeks. So they were around before the war. Maybe they stuck around after it for a while. But the effects on literally hundreds of thousands of U.S. forces that served in the Gulf, and I guess also stationed nearby in Kuwait or nearby countries' locations, the effects on these soldiers, just a horrible array of future illnesses, wives being infected by their husbands, children. I saw pictures, Bob, of the offspring of some of these soldiers who experienced the effects of depleted uranium. They were just too horrible to look at. The disfigured children that were born to the mothers of the wives of many of these service people who served in Iraq, Gulf War, and afterwards, and literally hundreds of thousands of soldiers, and now we've had Iraq 2003. So God only knows how many hundreds of thousands of our forces alone, never mind the Iraqis who live there and have been through this. And, you know, the New York Times doesn't write stories about all the Iraqis coming down with cancer. Well, they don't even write stories about the U.S. soldiers coming down with cancer and diabetes. And again, I mean, I remember I had a list, a fairly long paragraph of all the illnesses resulting from depleted uranium exposure. And there's nothing depleted about depleted uranium. It is active radiation that is the same kind of stuff that's coming out of this plant in Japan. I mean, it is really dangerous. It harms people. It ends up causing all these diseases and killing them. And this is what we're proliferating. Well, this is one issue, Bob. There's so much. I mean, I just never dreamed I would wake up this morning and be writing an article about a nuclear meltdown. But by golly, I've done it. I've done it. I've got to go back and go through it all and smooth it out and put it in final form. Maybe add a couple of thoughts that Javi mentioned. But that was not on my mind. On my mind is what's going on in the Middle East, mainly in Libya right now, what's going on in Wisconsin and the war in this country against organized labor. You want to jump into either of those topics, Bob? Bob, are we still connected? Oh, dear, I think we lost him. Maybe we can call him back. We're down at the bottom of the hour. We'll take a break and come back and call Bob back and get him back on the line. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Progressive Radio Network, your number one source for progressive commentary.
Mike Fader here. Every Thursday following Gary Null from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Time, I will expound and expand on stories, both personal and public, attempting to make the sometimes ephemeral but always essential connections between our internal landscapes and our external lives. So please join me, Mike Fader, Thursdays from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Time for The Turning Point, here on the Progressive Radio Network.
This is Barry Farber with the best self-improvement advice you've ever had or ever heard. Learn a foreign language. Sounds impossible? Give me a chance to prove it. I'm Barry Farber. I can guide you to mastery of any language in the world quickly, easily, inexpensively, and at home. You will grow culturally, linguistically, intellectually, commercially, professionally, even romantically. Get that smile off your face. It happened to me. Listen to the Barry Farber Language Club for details. Wednesday mornings right here on the Progressive Radio Network. Every Wednesday morning at 10 a.m. beginning March 23rd.
This is Adam Coulter with Brooklyn Jazz Underground Radio. We'll be here every Tuesday from 5 to 6 with great music, interviews, and live performances. Right here on PRN, the Progressive Radio Network. Again, that's Tuesdays from 5 to 6, or you can listen anytime at the archive at progressiveradionetwork.com.
Hey, Lee.
Yeah, Jeff.
Your girlfriend gave another interview.
No, don't play it.
Listen to this.
I have a journalism degree. That is what I studied. I understand that this cornerstone of our democracy is a free press.
Shut it off. I said not to play it.
We are in the worst reality show in history.
Why won't she shut up?
You know she's going to be president, right?
Okay, stop it. That's not funny.
I think we should just go limp. Lay back. Maybe then the mama grizzly won't tear off your limbs.
Cheater in the Rude, Thursdays, 8 p.m., Progressive Radio Network.
Progressive Radio Network, celebrating 5 years of independent news.
Welcome back. I think we have Bob Abley back in the line. Are we back on, Bob?
Yes, we are.
Oh, well, we do get disconnected once in a while. No big deal, just to get you back on the phone. The two things that have had my riveted attention since I've got to think back when things broke in the Middle East and then in Wisconsin, really labor battles, Wisconsin, I refer to Wisconsin outside the Beltway as ground zero of the battle to save or destroy organized labor in America. And the main target is public employees, because the private sector has been so decimated already, down to about 7% or so of private sector workers organized. Public sector, far, far more. But they are a big target, literally, to take them apart and destroy their rights, and you take away collective bargaining, and the ball game is over. So, and if they can't get it one way, they do it another way. And that's what they did in Ohio, and now they've done it in Wisconsin. And my feeling, maybe we can talk about that first, Bob, and then jump over to the Middle East, because I smell another war coming, as if we don't have enough of them, another one. Another targeted country to be destroyed for capital exploitation, a Western capital exploitation, Washington, America always getting the lion's share, but the other predators lined up for their slices as well, the usual one, you know, France, UK, those for Israel even getting in on this, but here with this really colossal battle going on. Again, centered in Wisconsin right now, and there's no question in my mind that the Obama administration literally is involved in this, if only indirectly. Both major parties at the federal, state, and local levels literally do not give a damn about the rights of working people, and the fewer rights these folks have, you know, I mean, the working households of America, the fewer rights they have, the more profits there are for the people who fund their campaigns, who line their pockets, who let them be on the take. I'm sure a lot of money is being stuck in people's pockets and offshore to tax havens and the rest of it. And I wouldn't be surprised if it went to the highest levels of government at all levels, because these people are profiting hugely, and they're decimating the working households of this country to turn America into God only knows what. So this has really had my focus, I think, since mid-January or mid-February. It was mid-January that I think trouble began in the Middle East, and then Wisconsin has had me so focused. I've written 14 Wisconsin-related articles, Bob. That's how focused I've been on it, and probably an equal number on what's going on in the Middle East. That with over a dozen countries there affected, you jump in. Should we talk about Wisconsin first? Your thoughts on what's happening there?
Sure. I actually wrote down the couple of things that I thought would be good to talk about today, and the top two were Libya and the Middle East, and then Wisconsin. So Wisconsin's fine. There's so much to say about Wisconsin, but I think coming from the viewpoint of philosophy, which is where I always try to, well, kind of naturally gravitate, of course, I think that what you're seeing in Wisconsin as and elsewhere is a power grab, of course, disguised as a philosophy. One of the things that I watched last night, just out of curiosity, I watched the Bill Maher's Real Time on HBO, because he had two well-known conservatives, one of them a member of the Tea Party, and I wanted to hear how they were going to turn this thing going on in Wisconsin, and they did pretty much what I expected them to do. They defended Scott Walker, and they defended the Republican power grab and the attacks on unions as a part of libertarian philosophy, and that is this idea that the individual and his or her money is the only thing that matters. And so what that really tells me right from the get-go, this notion of individualism and it's my money and how dare you spend it in the public, that's what libertarianism is all about. It's a power grab for those that already have money to keep their money. But I think it's important that we fight back at that philosophical level, this idea that it's my individual money, I earned it, I keep it, you don't get it. That denial of the public good is a denial of democracy, and the flip side of that, their notion of individualism that you see it from the Tea Party people and the people who, like Scott Walker, is an ideology, and I use that term ideology in the sense that Karl Marx did, and that is that an idea that is removed from the realities on the ground, that is removed from this class conflict that's been going on that we see so poignantly right now in the state of Wisconsin. So I think that this whole idea of the power that that they're trying to get. This is greed knows no bounds type of thing. Pure selfishness that's disguised as some type of philosophy. We got to come back at that by attacking individualism of these libertarians as an ideology and also understanding the public good. Unions support the public good. The idea of public workers supports the public good. There is such a thing as a community, and we are that community, and you undermine that community at your own peril, because if the community is destroyed, then there is nothing left except pure chaos of everybody grabbing what they can. So when you get this libertarian philosophy trying to get rid of community and putting individualism in its place as an ideology, there's no reason to do that. It's a pure ideology, and it can only be defended as an ideology by those who already have as much money and power that they can use it against everybody else, and they want to share as little of that as possible. And that type of thinking is condemned by every moral and religious system in the world. And so I think we got to go right back to those notions of condemning that whole perspective. Maybe I should be quiet right there before I keep going with this.
I think you made some key points, and I would say two words really highlight the core of the problem. Power grab, Bob. I absolutely agree with you 100% on that. In my article that went out today, I've written so many, I get all my titles jumbled up, but my title this morning I think was corporate power versus worker rights. And to me, corporate power is power grab. It's they want it all. They want to grab everything we have, including our lives, and they want to suck it in for the maximum amount of profit that they can make. And human beings are just commodities to be used to make more profit. And when you don't need them anymore, you just dump them like yesterday's garbage. But indeed, it is a power grab, Bob, and it's sickening. And the worst part of it is it's government backed. It's government endorsed, government sponsored, and we can rail about Scott Walker in Wisconsin, but Kasich in Ohio was just as bad. My own governor in Illinois, Pat Quinn, a Democrat, he came up with a package, a destructive package that hurts working people in the state. It's so destructive it'll end up making everything worse, not better. So this destructive system just proliferates across America, and to me, it's nowhere worse than in the nation's capital in Washington, and it doesn't matter whether the government is run by Republicans or run by Democrats. Their disagreements are really political. They're not ideological. On every single core issue, in my opinion, they are rock solid together. War and peace, worker rights versus none, corporations, uber alles, versus forget the people, they're just to be used. They are virtually together right straight down the line. They may have some disagreements on some fringe areas that aren't unimportant, but they so certainly don't rise to the level of war and peace. And whether people in this country have their freedoms anymore, that really gets down to the basic nuts and bolts. And if they're together on that, then they literally are the enemy. And I say that. I say that on air. I say it in writing, that literally our own government at all levels, city, county, state, federal, they are the enemy. They support the beast that's consuming us, this profit-making beast that literally is consuming us and stealing our rights and stealing our lives. And if we don't figure out a way to fight back and reverse this system, then we are goners, and we have to do it ourselves, because the people at the top in any power position, in government, in business, whatever, they will keep taking until we stop them, and somehow we have to find a way to stop them.
I think the fact that you are able to call the government the enemy shows that we're already past the point of no return. We don't live in a democracy anymore. We haven't lived in a democracy in some time, but now it's just becoming more and more visible to people on the screen. It's now on people's radar. That's one of the things that Scott Walker has inadvertently done, is he's kind of pulled the veil back from all of this, for people who were loath to admit this whole process of the killing of democracy. The idea of democracy is that the people are in control of what's going on. But when the people are just a few people, And when you've got a president of the United States that was put into office with great anticipation and great hopes that he would at least do some movement toward the people, and it turns out that he's a sycophant for corporate interests and also the state of Israel, but we won't get into that right now, then you've got, really, he's bringing the very end to what George Bush accelerated and Dick Cheney accelerated, and that is the oligarchy of the United States government. We're a state capitalistic government, and just because we get to vote on who our landlord is going to be doesn't mean that we live in any kind of democracy at all.
Boy, is that ever true. I refer to the country, Bob, as a rhetorical democracy. We people in high places sure have a lot of things to say about it, and the fact that they want to bring it to people all across the world, where the plain, simple fact is they not only don't give a damn about democracy, they simply will not tolerate it. They won't tolerate it anywhere else. In developing countries, other Western countries have their fake democracies the same way as we do. So whether we're talking about France or the UK or Denmark or all of the so-called Western countries, Japan, and these are fake democracies. They go through the process of having elections, but who gets a choice? Who gets a choice in America? You've got column A and column B, and you don't even get to pick the candidates in column A or column B. The party brokers pick those candidates, and then we have a McCain versus an Obama, a Bush versus a Gore, a whoever versus a whatever, and it really is, it's Twiddledee versus Twiddledum, the words that Ralph Nader used during the last campaign, or maybe the one before that. I mean, that literally is the choice we get. We can have Twiddledee or Twiddledum, and it's really two sides of the same coin, and we get nothing. These people don't support us. These people don't give a damn about us. We're simply here to be exploited and used. And all of the fancy language, Bob, Obama worried me the most during the campaign, even more than John McCain, who is a raving extremist. But like George Bush, we knew what McCain was. If he ever were elected president, but he was nominated not to win, he was nominated to lose, especially with the absurd running mate that was picked for him. That literally was a ticket picked to lose, not win. But Obama really worried me, Bob, because he's got the rhetorical ability to really fool an awful lot of people an awful lot of the time, and he's still fooling about half of the country. And I'm waiting, and I'm waiting, and I'm waiting. When will people realize that this guy not only is as bad as George Bush, he is worse than George Bush? And I have written so much about him and all of his policies, domestic, foreign, whatever, and I literally have proved in black and white that Barack Obama is worse than George Bush because he did stuff that Bush never would have dared trying. But Obama not only tried, he did it, and he got away with it, unless people wake up and realize this guy is a total fraud. Another one of my regulars, Bob, on this program, James Petras, he nailed Obama before he ever was elected, and he called him the greatest con man in modern times. And if I can remember his exact metaphor, he compared him to Melville's Confidence Man, where he shakes your hand, while he picks your pocket.
Oh, well, that's good.
We're stuck with. And now he wants his fourth war in the Middle East, Central Asia. He's already got him in Iraq. We had the phony pullout last August. There's no pullout. We still have 50,000 troops there. There's violence and killing and mayhem and torture going on literally every day. Every now and then I write about it. Afghanistan is a lost war, the longest war in America's history. It's a lost war. All the generals and admirals and whoever in the Pentagon and the highest officials in government, they know it's a lost war. They want to keep fighting it because the contractors make so much money. because we spend all of these hundreds of billions of dollars fighting these wars, not to win them, to spend more money, to make profits for all of these people, and not just the defense contractors, but all of the companies that benefit along with them, technology, like other toilet paper companies profit, because the troops need toilet paper. Everybody makes money by these wars, and when you're fighting a war, there's a lot of destruction, and the more destruction, the better, because you got to replace it, and you got to spend more money, which means more profit for these people. So shoot down our planes, sink our ships. We love it. We love it. We'll just build more of them and more money and more profits. And that's the kind of sick, broken system that we live under in this country. And we have the audacity, Bob, to call America a democracy. It really sickens me to even say the word, because it is so absolutely fake.
And you mentioned a couple of different things about moving into a fourth war. You know, this has been on the Pentagon's table for a long time. I mean, even former NATO commander Wesley Clark talked about this, that warring against Libya is part of kind of a five-year campaign that they've set up, beginning with Iraq, and then they were going to move to Syria and then Lebanon, then Libya, then Iran. So, and then Somalia and Sudan from there. So Libya is on the plans. I mean, they've already got plans to invade. And according to reports I've been reading, we're already there. We've already got troops there. We've already got advisors there. They're just talking openly about, well, we'll give any assistance that we can in any way that we can. But government forces from the United States have already been on the ground there, arming the insurgency. We already know that the British were there, their SAS special forces. Two of them were captured last week. They were saying that they were on a diplomatic mission, but it turned out that they were part of the British intelligence from the M16 on a secret mission. So we know that this stuff is going on. The Pentagon is moving its warships to the Mediterranean. It was in the news. The USS Enterprise just got through the Suez Canal. There's two U.S. amphibious warships that have also been deployed to the Mediterranean. 400 U.S. Marines are on the island of Crete, on and on and on. The 17th... U.S. Air Force is on the way there. We're going. And so all the talk that's been going on back and forth in the media about should we go, should we not go, would it be good for us, would it not be good for us, it doesn't matter. When Libya has 3.5% of the global oil reserves, more than twice what we have in the United States, we're going, and we're on the way. They've got 46.5 billion barrels of proven reserves of oil. We're going. And you're right. Here's who's going to benefit. The oil companies, the corporations, the weapons-producing companies in the United States, there's where the benefit is, and they're going to feed back to Obama because of what Obama's doing for them. We're out of the equation. We, the people, are out of the equation. There's no common good. There's nothing. There's just that.
Absolutely, Bob. I remember during the campaign I quoted Obama at least a couple of times, talking about how he wanted to be a peace, not a war president, and wind down these wars and end them. And there was no talk about escalation. So he's got them in Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, the Pakistan war that you virtually hear nothing about, certainly not in the major media. And now I literally can smell a war coming in Libya, and I honestly doubt there'll be an invasion except for special forces, aka death squads, eliminating pockets of leadership resistance, doing things like that. And the Brits there for the same reason, and also to work with the so-called opposition. Opposition. These are the damn fools that are enlisted by Imperial America to fight America. To die for U.S. imperialism. America doesn't give a damn about these people. They just want to use them as proxy cannon fodder to go fight up against Gaddafi. And as long as Gaddafi has at least most of his military, they really are cannon fodder. They simply can't stand up against an organized military that's trained. And these people know nothing. And Libya, besides oil, Libya is very rich in natural gas. And it has other resources, and it's vast territory. Apparently, there are a lot of other valuable minerals underneath those desert sands that America is just dying to get their hands on. And apparently satellite technology has mapped out the whole country, so they have a rough idea what's there and where it is, and they want to go get it. And they really screwed Gaddafi. Gaddafi is a despot, but Gaddafi made rapprochement with Washington back around 2003 or 4. And he even, I've said this before, he even offered to supply his troops to America's phony war on terror. So he was playing good guy. But, you know, he had maybe 10% independence in him and 90% subservience. And Washington doesn't tolerate 10% independence. They want 100% subservience. So Gaddafi wasn't that. And the plan, as far as I can see, is replace one despot with another, claiming he's a Democrat. And I don't think there'll be an invasion. I smell a shock and awe kind of operation. And God knows how many people will be killed, how much destruction will be caused. But again, the more the better, because then you've got to rebuild everything you destroy. So you get all these greedy contractors coming in and making millions. So just bombs away. The more bombs away, the more profits.
Absolutely. And we're going to we're seeing the same thing with Israel, by the way, and I do want to get this in here because Israel is continuing to bomb the Palestinians and destroy their whole infrastructure, what little is left of it. It's the same thing going on there. The United States, with Israel as its proxy, attacking the Palestinians, so there's another war front for you. The Israelis bombed a Palestinian medical facility less than a month ago, and then just this past week they bombed several buildings of an Islamic university under construction there. So, I mean, you know, these are United States-sponsored attacks. And then on February 21st, the Obama administration used its veto power to block a UN Security Council resolution declaring Israeli settlement activities illegal. And so you've got all these little areas that Obama is trying to build up his own power base. And you're going to have to deal with these other countries that are there. China and India are both there signing contracts with these other companies. With Libya, for example, China plays a central role in the Libyan oil industry right now. The United States is going to try to push China out when we invade. India has been signing contracts with Iran, as has China. The United States wants that oil, too. We're going to have to encounter some pretty tough opposition in the very near future as we start trying to push out China and India from the Middle East. They're going to want to come back.
Absolutely. I've got to get in one important comment because I think there's a bright side of this, but God knows when it will be apparent. I honestly believe, Bob, that America's policy, and it goes back a good number of years, it's not just recent, just seems to get worse and worse and worse, and it really got worse after 9/11. So call it mainly at its worst in the last decade or so. But I honestly believe that this policy is self-destructive, and whether under Obama, Bush, whoever comes after Obama, we are literally shooting ourselves in the foot. And the more of this we do, the more enemies we make, and the enemies are across the world. We don't have the same strength in Latin America that we used to have, in Central America. We haven't lost it, but we don't have it to the degree we had a decade or two or three ago. And it's the same in the Middle East. I mean, the Arab street is absolutely enraged at us. And the Libyans, they want nothing to do without coming in and rescuing their country. It's no rescue. They know that. They know what happened to Iraq. They know what happened to Afghanistan. They know what's going to happen to them if America literally sets up camp in their country and starts opening bases.
Yeah, when the United States moves in someplace, we don't leave. So
we don't leave. That's right.
It's not going to be a humanitarian intervention where we knock off Gaddafi's Air Force so we can't bomb the civilians and then go home. When we get there, actually, we're there. We're staying.
Oh, well, I
see.
If you want an example of the way we come and stay, South Korea.
There you go.
Early 1950s. We don't have any enemies in Asia. We have occupied South Korea since the 1950s. We have occupied Japan since the end of World War II. And we occupy so many other places. Again, we come and we never leave.
And it's costing us. While the Republicans at home and the Tea Party people at home are saying, our budget's in crunch, let's attack the workers here, we've got just one single missile. If we cut it off our defense budget, we could support an average-sized American public school for an entire year. So all we have to do is go to the Tea Party people and the cutters and say, hey, what about all of these 800 military bases around the world? And what about all these Hellfire missiles and these other things that we're building? How about cutting that back a little bit? And then you'll see the end to their libertarianism. No, we need that. We got to control the world. So you have, this is what we need to attack. This is what we need to go into. It's got to be stopping this military police of the world and attacking the people at home. And the founders knew that whole notion. I mean, James Madison said that the true interest of every nation is the permanent and aggregate interest of the community. And that's what we've seemed to have completely lost in all of this as we've become an empire. Chalmers Johnson said it best. We can either have an empire abroad or a democracy at home, but we can't have both.
Oh, absolutely, and very sadly we don't have him around anymore. He was a powerful voice, and he had also been, in his own words, at one time a spear carrier for the empire, quote-unquote. What words?
Yeah,
he was
that's great.
He was a CIA consultant. He wasn't an agent or an asset, but he was a consultant, and he finally realized that he was on the wrong side, just like Ray McGovern and some others, and they came over to the right side, but we've lost him. So those remaining need to carry on the struggle, but we somehow have to turn this thing around, because we have bad government in the extreme, and it's like a nuclear meltdown, Bob. If we don't contain this sucker, it's going to consume us. We're going to pick this up again next month.
Right, on April 10th.
Oh, on April 10th. I look forward to it, and I'll keep my eye on what's going on in Japan. Many thanks, but I wish we had a second hour to keep this thing going. This has been a much, much too short hour. Bobby, it was terrific. I love having you on. I look forward to having you back next month. Got Peter Phillips coming on tomorrow.
Oh, really? Oh, great. That'll be good for you, too.
Oh, absolutely. So we'll just segue right into what we're talking about today. And Peter's marvelous, former head of Project Censored, and he's head of the Media Freedom Foundation. Well, we'll get into that tomorrow. Same time. For sure, join us. Bob, many thanks.
Thank you.